without any proof. You didn't hear it, you didn't see it, you never heard it, not a word of it. You won't say nothing to no one, never tell a soul what you know is the truth.
Ooh. Yeah, that's GW talking to Scott, what's his name? His
what?
Press secretary. Oh, yeah. You didn't hear it. You didn't see it. You won't say nothing, you're not going to tell nobody.
Yeah, and that's also during the Gulf War. You didn't see those shots you were getting. You don't know what they are. And that's unfortunately where we are today, is a lot of the things that happen in science, in the name of science, are secret. I want to also tell you that if it hadn't been for mild silver protein, I don't know what I would have done the last few days. Those of you who have not taken advantage of it, wow, what a difference it made. And getting like I've told many of you, strep throat has been something I have been plagued with since the Gulf War. A lot of Gulf War veterans have. And mild silver protein was just a wonderful addition. I was so glad I had it on hand. And you can get mild silver protein from the Power Hour by calling 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829. They also have a nasal spray for those of you that have a lot of sinus problems that would like to eliminate them. Dave, you've got a Bushism.
Bushism of the day. Here you go. Wayne, Michigan, on June 28th, the year was 2000, and GW said, and I quote,
The fundamental question is, will I be a successful president when it comes to foreign policy? I will be. But until I'm president, it's going to be hard for me to verify that I think I'll be more effective.
It's hard to say those things with a straight face, isn't it?
Yes, that's
our president. Well, welcome back to the program. You're going to be glad you joined us today. In the Name of Science is the name of the book, which is a secret. It is a history of secret programs, medical research, and human experimentation by Dr. Andrew Golisik. He is a PhD, he is a college professor, and he speaks on the subject of the science behind the experiments, and we appreciate him joining us today. He is a professor at North Carolina A&T State University, where he teaches biology, human physiology, and principles of endocrinology. Now, we were talking in terms of aspartame before and how people are really experimenting and being experimented with that are using Splenda and aspartame. But what about AZT? You know, we don't know really what the purpose of AZT was. Could you shed some light on the purpose and why they created AZT?
Yeah, AZT was really designed in 1964 as a chemotherapy drug for cancer. It's extremely toxic. It's one of the most toxic drugs ever approved for indefinite therapy in America. And in fact, the developer of AZT admitted during the trial that it was too toxic to ever be used in human beings, but it was approved nonetheless because people were desperate for some sort of a treatment for HIV.
Well, you know, let me just interrupt and say that at the hospital I worked at in Houston, Texas, if a nurse got a needle stick, you automatically were placed on a regimen of a 10-day AZT therapy.
Right.
I mean, just prophylactic, preventative, they said. I mean, can you imagine putting somebody on chemo just because they got a needle stick?
Right. In fact, one of the earlier FDA medical officers, Ellen Cooper, who I mentioned in the book, reviewed the drug application and some of the clinical trials, and she continued to speak out, saying there were a lot of serious violations in the protocols of the study, a lot of errors made, and when you look at some of the Veterans Administration studies, for example, there was a conclusion of a Veterans Administration AZT therapy study back in 1991. This is the Veterans Administration version and the FDA's version. Following some of these experiments, the Veterans Administration said, and I quote, early AZT treatment resulted in only transitory benefits in whites and neutral or harmful effects in black and Hispanic patients. Mm. Minorities treated early had a significantly higher death rates, and the FDA summary, translated that into, and I quote, this was the FDA translation, among African American and Hispanic patients, those who received AZT at a later stage may have fared better than those who received earlier treatment. Now, do you see any similarity in the two conclusions?
That's incredible. Now, my question is, why did the VA have to get involved in AIDS research as early as 1979 and 1980?
This was 1991.
Right, right. But, I mean, I'm going back to, though, that's when they jumped into the AIDS research, was in 79 and 80.
Right.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, they were seeing veterans with HIV infections, and this was increasing. So they began a study on veterans, and there was a several year study, and they presented their findings. And later, when the FDA allegedly rewrote those findings, there was a big blow up, and the VA study was crucial, actually, in suggesting that AZT treatment had little effect at all on survival, whether it was given early in the disease or later, and that T4 cell counts initially went up and then they plummeted. And in fact, the study showed that overall 6% of patients in early treatment groups died before progression to AIDS, which actually indicated that they actually may have died from side effects of AZT. In some of these early studies, individuals that were given AZT actually died from the treatment rather than dying from AIDS itself.
Now, is AZT still being used?
It is, but to a limited effect. Right now, we're using protease inhibitors, and we're using cocktails of protease inhibitors, these are enzymes that the inhibitors inhibit the enzymes that are involved in the reproductive life cycle of HIV. So right now, that the course of treatment, unfortunately, we're beginning to see more and more AIDS patients developing more virulent strains of HIV, because if you don't take these medications on a very regimented basis, then the virus is going to mutate even faster than if you didn't take these protease inhibitors to begin with.
Okay, so I want to go. Let me go to a caller here real quick. Mark's been hanging on from Georgia very patiently, and then we'll get back to the subjects at hand here. Mark from Georgia, welcome to the Power Hour. You're on the air with Dr. Andrew Golisa.
Hey, I just wanted to say that this guy's right on. My great-grandfather, Franz Joseph, and I'll just leave the last name out, he was definitely Prussian, and he worked with Bill Donovan, bringing all those paperclip folks over,
mm-hmm.
And the paperclip scenario you're talking about, how they put it on the files, was true. The ones that administered stuff were the ones that were hung. The ones that did the research were the ones that were brought over here.
That's interesting. I was not aware of that.
And they were brought over to Tulane University was the headquarters. Me, as a Gulf War vet, because I have the Project Badger experiment, which is a HIV vaccine that they gave us that they won't admit to, but I have all the concoctions running through my bloodstream. Down in Tulane University, there's a book called Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus,
mm-hmm.
And it was a Dr. Ferry who worked with these guys, and it was the Marlberg virus is where HIV kind of came from at once, and then because I was trying to find out all the things that are wrong with me, I found out Gerhard Schrader was down there, so long story short is I started searching, you know, where he went after Tulane. Well, he's in Canada. Well, we actually spoke to him, me and another Gulf War vet, Bobby, I won't say his last name, but Joyce knows who he is. The long story short is this guy is right on, Doc, because I also went in NIH, and they had a seminar on experimentation, how to do it and how to hide the files. There's a guy by the name of Dr. Stephen Schwartz, who told me how they do it. I have the pamphlet at home. It actually says, you know, to be careful about experimentation because you might look like a Nazi. And Joyce, if you ever want it, I'll try to find it and photocopy it right quick.
I appreciate that. You know, Mark, I got to tell you, you are one gutsy individual. The things that you have done, to try and find out what is wrong with you. Check this out.
Stephen Schwartz turned around and told Anthony Fauci right quick that I was digging in their back door, and there's a guy by the name of Malcolm Martin who was the big HIV. Actually, it's allergies and infectious disease department is what it is in NIH. And Malcolm Martin got all pissed off and stuff like that because I went to Congress and told them all this stuff and names and places and stuff.
But it didn't make it into the transcript, did it?
Guess what? That didn't happen. Plus, they turned around and had a closed-door session with Anthony Fauci.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they had a meeting with Anthony Fauci and put him up on the stand. And it didn't go anywhere because no one was allowed to go to the meeting. And then the long story short is, let me finish with this. My great-grandfather told my grandfather, which told my father, and all of them didn't serve in the military. I was the first one to serve in the military. And my dad told me, you know, you're stupid, they're going to use you, and so forth and so on. Well, what was passed down through my father's was there's a Project Minotaur. And that's the super soldier Nuremberg, you know, master race.
How do you spell Minotaur?
Minotaur, like the animal in the maze, the half bull, half man.
Okay.
It's Minotaur. Well, Project Minotaur was, like I said, you know, where they're trying to make these master race soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
The long story short was, what was told to me by my dad is that, you know, you didn't listen to me, and you got shot up with all kinds of bull crap, and now you're falling apart by it and sick by it and stuff like that.
Well, you were special forces, too, and you tried. You wanted to do your duty to this country. And
I refused the shots in the battlefield. They handed me over to the JAG officers, and they said the last time someone was court-martialed in the battlefield in France, they were shot.
Yeah,
and you know, I had that to look at, and the stuff that was injected in me was called nuke juice. One of the things. There was like eight things.
We've got our guest back again, and let me go back to our guest, Dr. Golisic. Thank you very much, Mark.
Wait, the Minotaur is about like handing soldiers over to the monster. Just so you know, in other words, the experiment is the monster.
Okay, thank you very much, Mark, and I do appreciate your service and what you have to say. You know, there's a lot more that has happened that we're even aware of, and people like Mark that have been doing the research on this just to find out what's wrong with them. I mean, you've done a lot of work on Gulf War illness.
This is really great, and, you know, it shows like this that really expose the things that people would never hear of. You know, thanks to you, there have been new developments in, you know, Gulf War illness. For example, on February 11th, just this past February 11th, I don't know if your audience knows this yet, it's fairly new, the Army Public Affairs Department has put out a news wire for soldiers who may be suffering from Gulf War illness to call a 1-800 number, because they're finally admitting that it's not caused by stress, it's not caused by psychiatric disorders, but it may be caused by chemical, biological, and radiological exposure. And they do give a 1-800 number. This is fairly recent. It's 1-800-472-6719, and they're encouraging Gulf War vets who are suffering from illnesses to call that number. The other development, of course, is it's right now it's about a year old, but the University of California in San Francisco has a 5-year study that is definitively going to determine what exactly is causing Gulf War illness, not if there is Gulf War illness, but what is causing Gulf War illness, and they want any Gulf War veteran who wants to participate in this study to call 1-800-773-4883 in order to be involved in this. So there are a lot of things out there that are happening, and people are finally beginning to admit that Gulf War illness is not some psychosomatic illness, that it is caused by chemical exposures, biological exposures, and perhaps other things that we're finding. finally beginning to see.
Well, and it's about time. It's 13 years after the time that they should have been addressing these issues. And I've got to tell you, I hope that this is going to be it, but I don't know. I think they're now wanting to track those that are still alive. I really seriously believe that.
Yeah, you know, the uproar in the UK is even worse than here in the United States.
That's right.
Those British soldiers are up in arms because there are literally tens of thousands of British soldiers who are affected by this. And in fact, the United States decision to give $20 million for research funds in 2004 really follows the release of a British study of Desert Storm veterans, and that study definitively concluded that Gulf War illness is not psychosomatic, that it is a real syndrome, and it needs to be addressed. So, thankfully, the UK is actively pursuing this, and it's sort of forcing the United States to relook and revisit this whole issue.
Absolutely. But I think there are people that need to spend the rest of their natural lives in prison, though, for what has been done in the name of science, though.
Right.
I'd like to open up the phone lines. If you would like to ask a question of Dr. Golisic, 1-800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. I want to get to the subject of ethnic weapons because the new genetic warfare is here. And before we go to that subject, we've got about 1 minute. Explain, would you please, the danger of the Human Genome Project and what it is.
Well, the Human Genome Project was designed to map out all of the genes in the human body. We have roughly 50 to 60,000, they're not exactly sure, but about 50 or 60,000 genes in the human body. And the Human Genome Project was basically designed to map every gene on every chromosome so that we know, for example, that a particular gene on a particular chromosome is the gene that causes eye color or hair color or alcoholism or whatever. There's about 4,000 or 5,000 genetic disorders, and before we can find treatments for genetic disorders, we have to know where the genes are located. We have to study these genes to see what's happening with the genes. So the first step was really to map out this whole genome, which is the genes on all 46 chromosomes.
Okay, so, well, let's talk about ethnic weapons after this break. You can get In the Name of Science. We're going to offer it for $25 today. That's $3 off. Call 877-817-9829, 877-817-9829. In 3 minutes, we'll be back with Dr. Andrew Golisic.